Okay, to be fair, I'm not a big cook, so I don't have a lot of these books.
Hosted a snack show.
I know. Matt, I'm really good at eating and snacking. Yeah, not so much reading and cooking.
Welcome to The Snack Show with Jamie Fallon.
We're just a couple gals snacking our way through life and talking about it.
This is your first time in a podcast studio?
I just laid the snack down is what I'm saying.
Jamie, why in the H.E. Double Pretzel Sticks did we start a podcast?
That's a great question that I don't remember the answer to.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, snackers, we are honored to tell you about a fellow network show, Where We Are, with Michael and Melissa Ware.
You may have heard them on episode 68 of our show, The Snack Show, talking all things presidential snacks. Y'all, it was such a fun episode. You have to go listen if you haven't. If you haven't heard of Where We Are is hosted by Michael and Melissa Ware, a lead strategist and European affairs specialist. This daily companion podcast to the Where We Are Substack releases a long-form episode on Sundays featuring marital chatter, which features original analysis, exclusive interviews, and curated news and content about faith, politics, and public life. It's an awesome show, y'all.
It is. And Monday through Thursdays, Michael shares The Morning Five. It's a five-minute episode featuring current news and events in the political realm in a consumable and easy-to-understand way. It is honestly one of my most consistent places to get daily news, and it is definitely part of my morning routine.
It's true. We're so thankful for this show, so make sure you listen and subscribe today. Hey, snackers. Okay, if you're watching us on video, either YouTube or Spotify, you notice there's a special guest on the screen with us today. We are welcoming Matt Moore to the studio. Welcome to The Snack Show.
Clap, clap, clap.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. So if you haven't heard of Matt, you should have, because this is his fifth cookbook. But we are celebrating his newest cookbook called Butcher on the Block. Everyday recipes, stories, and inspirations from your local butcher and beyond. Okay, Matt, are you a butcher?
No.
Okay, tell us more.
My grandfather was a butcher.
Yes.
And for me, I've written five cookbooks.
Okay.
First book was called Have Her Over for Dinner.
Okay.
It was me teaching guys how to cook for girls. And I got married, so it worked.
Sure.
And then...
Wait, you weren't married when you wrote the book?
Was not married. No.
Yes.
No. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Single, broke.
Every single guy, I'm going to send that book and just see if
it was a good book.
Helps manifest it.
I joke around. It was sort of like George Costanza, you know, when he said, I'm unemployed and I live with my parents. I was broke and writing a cookbook, but I did have an apartment by myself. And it worked. And I did another book called A Southern Gentleman's Kitchen with Southern Living.
Okay.
And that was kind of my homage to the South, like what it means to hunt and fish and be curious about, you know, intellectual curiosity, chivalry, hospitality. Dave Haywood was in the book from Lady A. Luke Bryan is in the book.
Okay.
John Stinchcomb, a lot of different people, all the way down to Ernest, my cab driver that I met in Nashville that would smoke barbecue and then come pick you up on Broadway pre-Uber. And he would sell greens and ribs. And so those were my books about my recipes.
Sure.
And then I went on the road with Andrea Behrens, who's a photographer here. And we wrote a book called The South's Best Butts. And we met pit masters all around the country. We told their stories, shared their recipes. And then that did well. And you're only as good as your last book. Sort of like a restaurant's only as good as last meal.
Sure.
So that was Low and Slow Cooking. And then we did a book called Serial Griller. Where we travel the country and kind of similar. I'm all about like a diverse cast of interesting people.
Yeah.
So we have two of the last James Beard best chefs in America, Michael Solomonoff up in Zahav at Philly.
Okay.
He has multiple restaurants, and Ashley Christensen out of Raleigh, North Carolina, all the way to Cadillac, who cooks outside of the Claremont Lounge in Atlanta. And if you've never been to the Claremont Lounge, you know what kind of place that is. And Butcher on the Block was sort of my opportunity to say, okay, I no longer want to be bound by low and slow cooking, hot and fast cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have this wide array of all ingredients treated under every method. And because my grandfather was a butcher and served in World War II, I started seeing a trend where, you know, butchers and restaurants were starting to kind of co-mingle.
Yeah.
And I have another business in the south of France. So in Europe, it's very common that the best meals that you get are actually cooked at the butcher shop. So in France, like, that's the secret. Like, don't go to the cafe or the brasserie. You go to the boucherie, and you have this incredible meal that you take home. And so I started to find that. And we started at the butcher, and we found out that it's not just meat. It includes game, but it also includes seafood and vegetable butchering as well.
So cool. That's one of my favorite things about this cookbook. Okay, to be fair, I'm not a big cook, so I don't have a lot of these books.
Host of the snack show.
I know. Matt, I'm really good at eating and snacking, not so much reading and cooking. But I will say this is one of my solo cookbooks in my kitchen, and I was reading through it, and it's cool because it's not just recipes. You're telling stories of these different butchers and alongside the recipes. And I just think that's so cool that you're like intertwining stories with the recipes.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of am. I'm not a journalist.
Yeah.
I'm not a chef. But somehow I'm on the road, and sort of like a TV show in the book. And, you know, I'm in a little 1976 Piper Cherokee that I fly to most of these destinations. And so I used to joke around when we saw the smoke and we smelled the barbecue. It was time to land. Saw the smoke's not a funny joke when you're at 3,000 feet in the air.
In a tiny plane,
yeah, a tiny plane. But, you know, that being said, it's a huge honor for me to share this platform that I built with a lot of really amazing people. And life is funny how you meet people. Like, there's a gentleman here from Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and I met him because American Airlines kept canceling my flights out of Williamsport, and I went and had a great meal. And that night that I was there, I was sitting at the bar, and I remember specifically a good-looking gentleman, slick back hair, kind of a white chef's coat, and he was crying. And we started talking. He said, well, my father passed away today, and my family's here. And then we just sort of kind of had a few cocktails, and he started breaking out charcuterie and telling me all these things. And over the next few years, I would be in Williamsport randomly for business or other things. And we would always have dinner together. And then 5 years went by. I hadn't thought about him much. And it was basically my last decision on the book was, you know, where am I going to go next? And I was like, oh my gosh, Vince used to tell me that they would take a whole hog in Italian fashion and do these things and cure these. So I picked up the phone, I called him, he said, Matt Moore. It had been 5 years. I said, Vince, I was like, I'm doing this book, man. You're my last chance. I said, when was the last time that you actually butchered a hog? And he was silent. He said, not since my father passed. And so we put it together, flew to Williamsport. He brought his son in and his cousin, and we did it. And I remember him sitting there. It was a beautiful, cool, crisp, kind of a spring Pennsylvania day. And he had a cup of coffee, a little bourbon in it. And he said, you know, I can feel my dad here. And like, that's why I write books. That's what it's all about.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've looked at a lot of cookbooks, but the humanity in this one is like really fun. And the featuring of people, like, it's not just featuring a chef's
it's not
other
about
thing.
Me.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, and it's also just kind of everyone. There's a guy from the Kroger here down the road.
Yes. Yeah, Tommy Kelly. Come on. Everybody knows Tommy.
I can't wait to go meet him.
Yeah, you got to get his number, and that way you can call him on like Saturday. You know, the Titans are getting ready for a Sunday. I'm like, hey, Tommy, I need about 20 pork steaks back in the back. Hide them back there. Don't tell anybody.
I love
those are mine. Those are reserved. And there's utility to the book that, like, I think that the butcher is part of the community, right? In the old days, people would settle into towns based on if there was a good butcher there.
That's cool.
And during COVID, I realized that we had lost a lot of that interaction. And I would go to the grocery store, and remember, it was chaos, but all the boneless, skinless chicken breasts were gone. All the steaks were gone. All your pork chops were gone, but whole chickens were there, and briskets were there, and odds and ends and trimmings. And I was like, well, people just don't know how to cook these. And that was another reason that 100%. I had the genesis of kind of showcasing the alternative cuts that I think are really delicious.
Well, and that's exactly what keeps you away from the butcher counter. I'm usually over by like the Oscar Mayer prepackaged deli meats because I can handle that. But to me, it's so like, I feel like I should know more when I go up to the counter, and I get so intimidated about like, I don't even know what I'm looking at or how to prepare half of this or what I should be asking for. So if I go to the counter, what would you say should be like one of the things I order, I say, hey, I'm going to try this. And it's an easy like first dip into grilling or cooking a hefty meat.
I think that the butcher is the most underpaid cook, chef, recipe writer in the world because everybody says, well, how do you cook this?
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, there's the call brand steaks like your ribeyes and your fillets and your strip steaks. But like, I'm making an effort, if you're just going to focus on the steak side of the house, to be like, hey, what's good today, man? Like, you tell me what you have that's different. And that actually is an exciting time for the butcher. Remember, they're in business, right?
Sure.
So their job is to sell you something so that you become a repeat customer. And the cool thing about the butchering world is, like, for me, living in East Nashville, I've got a plethora of places, from Porter Road, who's in the book, to the Publix, to the Kroger, to the Turnip Truck, to the Aldi, and everywhere in between.
Yeah.
And it's about fostering that relationship. And I love to get on my bike and ride around and decide what I'm going to make every single day for dinner. In fact, that's what I'm going to do after I leave here. I don't know what's going to happen.
I love it.
You know, I think you ask them those questions, and they may say, oh, actually, we just got in, like, a flank steak today. Or we got in a skirt steak. Have you ever tried that before? Oh, well, then just high heat, treat it like anything else. Can't mess it up. It's 2 minutes on a side over this, that, and the other. And, like, you get that kind of communication. And a lot of people, as I've been doing this particular book tour, as this book came out, a lot of people said, I'm intimidated by my butcher. I don't know to ask the questions. Sure. I purposely stay away from the counter. And they're actually, like, an expert that is sitting there ready, willing, and able, and thrilled to talk to you. And that's why I kind of think that I wanted to bring that character more to light and celebrate this trade that's gone on since the beginning of time, that has a lot of expertise behind it.
Totally. Do you go to the butcher counter?
I don't, but it's really interesting. Right after we talked about scheduling this, I was been rewatching Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is the 1950s or 60s, I can't remember. And they go to their butcher, like, every week. And there's just such this, like, community thing that we don't do now. It's like, what can I buy without looking anybody in the eye? I self-check out. I get out as fast as possible. And so it's just sort of this, like, reawakening of how to do that part of life that we don't do in the year.
Or we order it, you know, on Instacart or all these things. We have no idea the quality of the food. Am I buying the right cut? Am I look? You know, they're going to look at 12 steaks and say, this is the one that you want because it has the right content. It's the right cut, you know, depending on what your needs are. So, like, you get a free resource that's there, that's willing and able to tell you. And then you've got folks like Porter Road that are doing, you know, amazing, like, vertically integrated. Like, we talk about farm to table, and what does that mean? I mean, God, we've done it since the beginning of time, especially in the South. But those folks are really taking from raising to fabricating to all that different process to dry aging, which really separates a lot of what they're selling, to free range chickens and all these ideas. And, like, if you've never had a chicken from Porter Road, then it's going to change your life, right? Because it goes back to time of the original ways that they're, you know, humanely raising these types of animals. And my grandfather, who was a butcher and owned a grocery store in South Georgia, he used to say, for my grandmother's fried chicken, never fry a chicken over 3 pounds. You know, never eat a chicken over 3 pounds. Well, that's because it wasn't, you know, this processed world that we live in.
Yep.
That's fascinating.
That is. Did you do you remember your grandpa being a butcher? Like, would you go visit him?
So his store had closed right before I was born. So my sister and I joke around about it in the book. You know, she has all these stories where she was there and she had a Coca-Cola and all this. But, you know, my grandparents on all sides, I was fortunate to grow up with all of them and have a relationship.
Yeah.
And he passed away when I was in college. So I do have these just unbelievable memories specifically of him, you know, butchering in the home, because I come from a Lebanese family in my mom's side, South Georgia. So we'd have fried chicken with hummus and tabbouleh and mac and cheese and collard greens.
Yum.
Greatest combination in the whole world, right?
Yum.
But he would also have, like, butcher cuts of meats. And I just remember it being a big part of what that was. And so being able to go back to my cousins, and I still have his knife when he passed away, and it's the sharpest knife that I have. Seriously,
wow.
Like, it's just unbelievable. So those memories were really awesome for me to posthumously honor a family tradition that I was a part of. And I think one of the things that's been really fun about this book is when I tell people that this is what I did, everybody goes, oh, yeah, well, my dad was a butcher, or my aunt was a butcher, or my uncle was a butcher. Like, everybody has a connection to the trade.
That's so cool.
Hey, snackers. We love telling you about one of our favorite one-stop shops for all of your snack needs. Yes, it is Nuts.com.
And as Jamie said, Nuts.com is literally your one-stop shop for freshly roasted nuts, dried fruit, sweets, pantry staples like specialty flours, and more. The whole selection means that there's something for everyone.
At Nuts.com, quality is a top priority. They roast their nuts and pop their corn the same day it ships, so they will reach you deliciously fresh. Satisfaction is guaranteed. I super love their dark chocolate covered cherries, the dried mangoes, and the dried roasted macadamia nuts. There is something for everyone,
it's
telling you.
So true. Okay, right now, Nuts.com is offering new customers a free gift with purchase and free shipping on orders of just $29 or more at Nuts.com/snackshow. So go check out all of the delicious options at Nuts.com/snackshow. You'll receive a free gift and free shipping when you spend $29 or more. That's Nuts.com/snackshow.
Okay, when you first started talking about this book, you talked about butchering vegetables.
Can we talk more
about that? What does that mean? Because as I looked through this, there are some amazing non-meat
recipes
for those that are listening and watching that are like, I don't eat meat. So what is butchering vegetables?
It's, I guess, something they do in San Francisco. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
No, I love it. It actually started in New York.
Okay.
And so Cara Mongini is who we focus on in the book. So when they created New York's Eataly, she had this grand journey from the corporate world to saying, hey, enough's enough, and I want to follow my passion. And she became really focused on this idea of making vegetables more of the center of the plate. So she's not a vegetarian, not a vegan, but vegetables are the center of the plate. And so when Eataly popped up, that was really where the genesis began, is that she found out that a lot of people, if you're making a stir fry, there's a proper way to break down the elements from peppers to onions to broccoli or whatever's going into that, to a kohlrabi, to a cauliflower steak. And so she was there in the same way that we talked about, don't be demystified and go through the plastic containers and just say, hey, look, here's a head of cauliflower. What do I do with it?
Sure.
And she would say, you cut it this way so it doesn't fall apart. And so it became a real thing. And then she actually is married to some of the folks from the Jenny's Ice Cream side. So she was in Columbus, Ohio, and ran her own restaurant and facility there. And when I met her, she had actually moved during COVID and said, hey, my family origins are in San Francisco. And she was living in her old grandfather's home in the Cow Hollow district of San Francisco, who was also a butcher, an Italian butcher. So it comes full circle. But the idea is, like, I my job in this book is to celebrate diversity and celebrate different ideas and celebrate the people that are doing that. And I'm just the conductor of the circus, right?
Yeah.
I want you to sit right seat with me and meet these people and showcase what they're doing. And I think her mission is really, really strong. And it added that extra pop of diversity and kind of the what. And when you eat her recipes, like, my mama makes a great carrot cake. But Kara's, man, and it's like, it is like vegan and everything else, all
right,
those things.
Right.
It was unbelievable. And
we
ate it like with our hands, you know,
after the shoot.
Sure. It was fantastic.
I love it. Okay, what are some of your favorite recipes from the book?
You know, the way the book is divided is we go out on the road and we meet, always it's 12. I think there's power in the number of 12. And we always go out and meet 12 different personalities. And it's my job to tell their stories and get their recipes, right?
Yeah.
So probably the best bite I had was the first place we stopped, which is up in Cambridge City, Indiana. A friend of mine who's a filmmaker in Nashville had talked about his Uncle Jerry. And what that is a fifth generation butcher shop, German immigrants that have come over, and they're a full processing facility, right?
Okay.
So they've built this incredible business. It's called Rim Foods. And we're there, and they're throwing a party, and they're doing the county fair burgers. Like, up in Indiana, they eat pork burgers. I don't know if that you know this, but like...
I've never had that.
Yeah, they make it out of pork, and it's delicious. That's a great recipe. It's called the county fair burger.
Great.
Indiana pork burgers, a big thing there.
Okay.
But we're doing all these different things, charcuterie, and he's telling me the story, and I'm asking about the tools of the trade. It's my first interview for the book. He's like, yeah, you know, what we did is we worked such long hours on the line when... You know, people, they don't like to buy fat. And so when we trim the strips and the ribeyes, there's always kind of a fat tail and a little pearl of meat. And so, you know, we had to cut the fat tail off, but we trimmed out the pearl and we just soak it in some Worcestershire. And as we get hungry, we'd eat it. And he's drinking a scotch. I was like, well, Jerry, I said, I don't see that. I don't see that on the family table. No joke. He goes, give me a minute. He gets in his truck, drives up to the plant, cuts and trims, soaks it in Worcestershire, and I looked at Andrea and I ate it, and I was like, we're on to something.
No,
like,
way.
One of the best bites, and it's two ingredients. It's raw meat and Worcestershire. Yeah, so that's
a
really interesting one.
Okay.
I think one of my favorites, I give up a lot of things. I give up my house blue cheese. There's always hot, like, chicken wings that I do in the book.
Sure.
I give up fried chicken, but I also, my own blue cheese recipe that I said I would never give up, I gave it up. And, like, I'm not good for anything anymore. I've given up all my secrets.
I love it.
But I think probably the star of the show that we've been doing on a lot of media that I really enjoy is a flank steak.
Okay.
And what the flank steak is, a really beautiful, affordable cut. It's a larger cut, so it's perfect for entertaining. And I have an open door policy in East Nashville. Everybody's coming over to my house. So, you know, y'all, it's also, you're like, hey guys, it's awesome, but y'all are starting to get a little expensive too, you know?
So flank is
a great way for me to serve this. And so the actual striations of the muscle, we actually score that. And that's kind of a butchering technique. So a lot of the recipes you're going to find in this book have some tie to knife skills or butchering, okay, or alternative ideas like a shrimp on the half shell that we're cooking like we do with redfish in Louisiana. We cut it on the half shell and we actually let the shell preserve and kind of protect the delicate piece of shrimp. So this is a flank steak. We score it, make it more tender, give it a little love, high heat, and then we take a page out of a great chef and pitmaster, Adam Perry Lang, that creates a board sauce. And the idea of a board sauce is that in my instance, we take Dijon, we take capers, we take red onion, we take parsley, and then we rest the meat on that. And it's just this lovely melange of all these flavors, and then you slice the meat into that super tender against the grain, and you kind of toss it in the sauce of the natural juices, and it's a home run. And the way I know it's a home run is my mother told me so, because I still need that validation.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah.
I'm a big beef tartare fan.
Yeah.
Love it so much. Never made it, of course, but one of your recipes is like a steak tartare toward the beginning.
Yeah, that's actually...
That's one I'm going to try.
It's from the south of France. And so
nice.
I have a business in Grasse, which is the perfume capital of France. And so I spent a lot of time there. And I was just there a week ago and had a family dinner with Amory and Christophe, who are the butchers at Maison Maillard, which is Maillard is a big term in cooking. The Maillard, I got to change the French to the English, the Maillard reaction, which
that
is
was
basically
a Georgia, not just American.
It's this chemical dance between amino acids and what happens at high temperatures. And so they have this beautiful butcher shop. And, of course, when you get to France, I mean, you're like, what kind of recipes are you looking for? I was like, we came kind of for the tartare.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But his technique is different. And so he's got some cilantro and some different ideas to it. But it's hand-trimmed, right? So we talk about that a lot. Like, if you're going to do something along the lines of a tartare or raw, like a carpaccio, remember, you want to go out and find something that probably is cut that day and on surfaces that you know they've been in, right? So I might go out and buy a whole tenderloin, or in this case, they use what's called a faux filet, and you can just break it down or grind it by hand. It's similar to what I do in my grandfather's homage. We make what's called kibénaya, which is a Lebanese-style tartare, where we grind it three times. And so I have my own grinder, and I go pick up the steak, and I know what I'm working with. And, you know, what you're worried about, the reason, like, when people say there's risk of eating a burger to a rare temperature, well, you've ground that meat, which picks up additional surface area, and if you don't cook the internal side, then you may not know the quality of that. So if you go to good butcher shops and you actually grind it yourself, or you ask them to do that fresh, then you have much more clarity and knowledge as to where that food has been. So tartare is something you can easily make at home, right?
Yep.
You just have to start with a really good quality of meat, if you will. A carpaccio, sometimes the way we do that is we take a piece of tenderloin, we pop it in the freezer for a little bit. So the freezing would kill any bacteria on the outside, but we're not going to freeze the cut, but it also gives us utility with a sharp knife to get that really thin slice. I'll go back to Seinfeld because I have a meat slicer. Remember the episode where Kramer got the meat? That's me. I leave it out when the guests come too because I want you to see it. I want you to know that I have the meat slicer.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's impressive. Okay, you answered my question because I got excited and then I was like, wait, I don't have a meat grinder, but I'm just going to go to my local butcher, Tommy, and say, hey, can you ground this up for me for my tartare?
Done and done. Put them to work.
Okay, you said the word easily. I feel a little overwhelmed, but I'm going to trust you on that. If someone picked this up and was like, all things feel hard except for Top Ramen, like, where would be a really good place to start here?
She's talking about us.
Yeah.
I'm using air quotes and hypothetically somebody.
Yeah. You know, my first book was Have a River for Dinner.
Yeah.
And the idea was that I'm going to teach the guy that, you know, has never cooked before. At the time, I was frustrated because if you went out to, like, the Food Network and the websites and you had the ultimate lasagna, you know, by the time the guy would go out to the grocery store and buy four different cheeses and three different meats and didn't know if he was going to be a good meal or not, he's already spent $150, he's upset, and then you know, whatever happens. So I've always set out to have a goal that I'm a cook. You know, I'm not a chef. And so how do we take five ingredients, ideally, and just a meal is only as good as your ingredients, and treat them properly and let that ingredient speak for itself. So you're going to have a ton of recipes in here that you'll see I'm purposely curating to be very, very minimal ingredients. And so a lot of that happens to be like really good cuts of steak. So in my mind, I think like the elevation of where you're going to pick up like from the more artisanal butchers, go to Porter Road and ask for dry aged. Like dry aged is a whole new ball game, right? And it's not what you're finding from a lot of your larger grocers or supermarkets. That's where they've taken specialty. And that's an expensive thing for them to do. Like minimally, all their cuts are dry aged for 15 days. A lot of specialty in that. We talk about how you can do that at home as well. So I'd say to you, like, you know, a perfectly cooked steak is something that you can go out and buy a digital thermometer, which costs you $9.99 on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And if you've never done it before, that's okay. Don't be too worried. Cast iron pan, which costs you, you know, Lodge cast iron. You can pick it up for $20 at a hardware store or anywhere else. And good butter and salt, and you can cook one of the best steaks of your life if you focus on minimal ingredients and just the technique. My job is to give you the technique, to tell you have a glass of wine or something like that and calm down. But you're going to find a lot of recipes throughout this that are meant to be purposely not complicated, just to pull off a meal.
That's exactly what I need. Non-complicated.
And I want to tell you what it is, but it's coming up later. I'm going to give you the exact recipe.
Please.
Okay. Also, just as people are thinking, if I saw this butcher on the block, the most surprising thing, what you don't know here, Matt, is that fowls are savory and I'm our sweet person on the plot. At the very back here, there's ice cream. Mm-hmm. I just want everyone to know that I'm probably going to go home. Of course I found the ice cream, everybody. And so you two can make Alaskan ice cream. We also just were in Alaska together on vacation. So.
Did you read what actually goes in it?
Yeah, tallow.
So it is for like those that are paleo friendly, right? Uh-huh. It's essentially taking beef tallow hot, so that's fat, the clear fat, and you basically emulsify it in the snow. That's what they would do with sugar or fruit. And so there's no dairy in it per se. It's actually just emulsified fat with sugar and fruit.
Did you know what tallow was before this?
I learned it earlier this year. I was at like a farmer's market, and it was like a salve that you could buy. That's also it's supposed to be really good
for
like
this word.
Tallow.
So I learned, and it's for like scars or whatever. So someone said you're putting beef fat on you, and I was like, if it works, it works.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big byproduct of butchering that's used in all sorts of different applications from. Soaps to, like you mentioned, salves and all different types of things. So it is incredible utility that's used. And so I was trying to, in the back of the book, come up with, we called it alternative cuts, from cocktails to desserts to a Yorkshire pudding, which is very much based off that idea, to infusing spirits, because I want it to be a general kind of catch-all cookbook. Whereas the last couple books, hey, if you're a griller, I'm going to give you everything you need to know. If you're barbecue. But this one is more for the everyday, general cookbook, because you're frying, you're roasting, you're grilling, and it's got all ingredients involved as well.
I love that. It is fun that there's also cocktails. There's a bacon boulevardier and a bacon Bloody Mary.
Ooh, I mean, you add bacon to anything, I am in.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, I think the bacon trend is sort of, it's never over. I mean, everybody lost their minds about bacon. but it kind of started to calm down a little bit, but you still have to have it.
You gotta love bacon.
Yeah.
Okay, we've talked a lot about fancy recipes. Matt, I just want to know, if you're going to the grocery store and you're like, I just want a snack on something, what are you pulling from the snack aisle?
Is this my snack of the week?
No. This is separate.
Okay. Now you have to come up with two.
Thanks. I was prepared for this. I'm a cheese and cracker guy.
Okay.
That's my snack.
Love it.
Like, even like just sharp cheddar cheese on a, I get bougie from time to time.
Sure.
I'll get out my Pellegrino and my, very bizarre kind of wafer thin crackers, but like a Triscuit and a cheddar cheese. Now my mom will do it, which I love. Sometimes I'm too lazy, but there's nothing better on the planet than a cracked black pepper Triscuit, a slice of extra sharp cheddar cheese, a thin slice of tomato, and a thin slice of Vidalia onion.
Okay.
Interesting.
Ta-da. First time you heard it.
That is. I'm seeing the picture of the layers.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Delicious.
I'm not out.
I'm not either.
Delicious.
Okay, great.
Trust me on this one.
Okay, now let me make it even more snackified for our listeners. It's got to be prepackaged. It's got to probably be very unhealthy for you.
Gotcha.
It's got to have a bright color. What are you reaching for?
Yeah, what's your vice?
100% pork rinds.
I love it.
That's how I survived COVID. The boxed rosé and the pork rinds at 2 p.m. every day?
Come on.
Yeah,
love it.
Of course.
I actually heard that pork rinds aren't that bad for, like, they're a healthier option.
I mean, in that low-carb paleo world, but I mean, everything's going to kill you at some point.
Sure.
Yes, you may as well just enjoy it.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
I love it.
Man, boxed rosé and pork rinds. I didn't see that coming, but I appreciate
it. Some Triscuits, too.
I appreciate that.
Okay, before we wrap up this conversation, we will move into a segment we prepared you for.
Yeah, I'm ready.
It is time for Snack of the Week. We have a little jingle that's playing. You can't hear it, but it's
I love
playing.
It.
Okay, because you're a special guest, Matt, we want you to start out with your snack of the week. Yeah.
Okay, so I have this this bad habit that every time I go and do these types of things, I throw my wife under the bus, and today is no exception. My favorite snack is nachos.
Okay, he's in the club.
Yeah, okay. You're one of us.
Yes.
The worst person to eat nachos with is my wife. Because we've all been there, right? You get the nachos, and if they're not curated the right way, sure. They've got a lot of the cheese over here. The sour cream is hers. Forget it. Like, I love sour cream, but she's going to take it. So she's that person that, like, you're in the group, and you're like, there's a little bit of chicken. I'll take this one that has, like, a little cheese. Maybe going for the guac. Maybe going for the salsa. But I'm going to take my time. Everybody else should take their time and know what's going on. My wife's like,
no, she's, you know,
right off the top. Right?
I respect her so much.
So to solve this, I do what's called like the perfect bite nacho. It's something that we grew up with. Uh-huh. Think of like Chili's nachos where
yes.
they spread the refried beans. Mm-hmm. They individually do the cheese, maybe the jalapeno, and then you can add from there. And so if you've ever made those, it's sort of a pain to make said nachos. And one of my buddies who is in Texas, and people from Texas like to take credit for everything, he told me one time, he was like, why are you doing all this work? You know, every chip, and then they break, especially if you've got the mm-hmm. scoops.
Oh, yeah,
he
yeah.
goes, man, we just use tostadas. Ding, 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 ding,
genius.
Ding.
Genius.
Big format, same pull-off. And so instead of doing, like, 38 individual chips, couple of tostadas, and
there
we end up
is.
With the tostada nacho, which is super simple. This is my easy recipe. And
y'all,
the idea here was leftover quesadillas, tostada nachos, because you always have these things laying around, right? Uh-huh. It's a late night snack.
Sure, sure.
It's a kid snack for me. Very simple.
Yeah.
So tostadas changed my world, man. I don't spend 20 minutes doing the perfect bite nacho, and everybody's happy, and my marriage has survived it.
Yeah, it's your own personal pan nacho instead of a personal pan pizza.
I love it.
That is a very... That's a blessing to everyone.
That really
We all need to know about that.
That really is. I love that. Tostada. Okay, Jamie, what is your snack of the week?
My snack of the week is I've been traveling recently. I've had this, hadn't had it in a while, and I saw it as I walked by. Southern banana pudding. Hadn't had it. Have you had this?
No. So, never even heard of it.
What?
I mean, banana pudding, but not
Southern. But like with vanilla wafers in
it. Isn't that just regular?
I mean, it's not just pudding. I don't know.
Is it? Like pre-made and refrigerated?
It was. It was because I was in the airport. But vanilla wafers were not soggy, and that's really what
that's
got
a miracle.
Me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so they had just made it and put it in because I had to wait a few minutes. She's like, just have to put it in the little things. And so banana pudding is my snack of the week.
But it was titled Southern banana pudding?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh. That's what I'm curious what makes it Southern.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the hard vanilla wafers.
I guess. I don't know. I grew up on the West Coast, and I only knew my grandma, who was from Tennessee, made it that way with vanilla wafers.
Yeah, I mean,
and cut bananas, layered,
yes, sure.
and baked.
Sure.
I don't know.
It's delicious.
It's great. Whether it's Southern or not, banana pudding with vanilla wafers.
Love.
And there was a little crunch because the vanilla wafers were still,
right.
which you would have really loved.
See, you say that, and I usually am a crunch gal, but banana pudding, I like the cookie soft.
Oh,
what time of day did this happen?
Please say early.
Lunchtime.
Okay.
Oh, dang.
I was actually in the Atlanta airport.
Oh, nice.
On a layover. Oh. And the line for Asian food was very long, but there was a place that had sandwiches, and I saw banana pudding on the thing, but I didn't see it out. And so I said, do you have banana pudding? And she's like, we just made some. I'll put it in our little. And
fresh
she
said, banana pudding at the airport?
Yeah.
Man.
That is the most surprising thing I've ever heard. I love it.
So...
What gate were you at? So the Atlanta folks.
I don't remember. I have no idea. I'm so sorry. I've flown through the Atlanta airport. I think
Delta
every
or Southwest.
This was Delta.
So yeah. I was gonna say Southwest. You'd be in C, but it's a
I'm gonna guess B. I feel
B.
like I've gone
yeah,
through B
like
the
B.
most consistent, but I can't. It was next to an Asian restaurant. So if anyone wants to find that in the Atlanta airport,
it's strong that you passed up the Varsity too.
That is
that.
Okay. Everything had chili in it, and that felt like
not recommended before a
flight. That felt like a dangerous choice on a second flight. And so I thought, you know what, I'm gonna think about future Jamie and not
you.
Current
respect
one right
to the
now.
Passengers. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fal, what's your snack of the
my
week?
My snack of the week. Matt, I think you're gonna like this because you mentioned your go-to is crackers and cheese. So mm-hmm. I think this would pair well. Think about your charcuterie. This would be a nice additive. Sweet peppers with cream cheese and Marcona almonds.
Love it.
Have you guys had this?
Love it.
You've had it?
I mean, I love the idea of it
sure.
in my mind.
I've never had it with Marcona almonds. I've done cream cheese on peppers with like a salami or some kind of meat on
top.
Oh,
great idea. So I had a little charcuterie party at my friend Carrie Ann. So shout out to her. She's a listener of the pod. She brought out these sweet peppers. And I was like, oh, interesting choice on our charcuterie board. Mm-hmm. She's like, don't stop there. Grab the cream cheese. grab the Marcone almonds, put them all together. Y'all, my literally snack of the week, snack of the year, snack of the decade. It is so good. I can't even tell you. And it's so simple. I brought it to lunch yesterday, cut those suckers in half, dipped it right into the cream cheese, added my little almonds. Y'all, I can't praise it enough. It is so good.
Sounds delicious.
It's so good.
It sounds so good. It sounds like an adult version of what was the celery with the peanut butter and the
ants on a log.
Ants on a log.
Okay.
It's an adult.
That's a hit in my house. An eight-year-old and six-year-old, yeah. You know.
It's an adult ants on a log.
Mm-hmm.
It would be maybe like Beatles on a bridge.
100%. Start your own cookbook, Fal. Yeah. Sounds like it. If you need her for your next one, you can call her.
Collaboration?
Good title.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. Well, Matt, thank you so much for being here.
And thank you
so much for sharing this book with the world. I am so excited to dive into it. I'm serious. Beef tartare coming over?
Yeah, happy to.
Okay, what are you going to make for me? The ice cream.
The ice cream or the catch-all salad, as I've went by it about four times today.
It's a good one. Feta makes it better.
Feta makes it better. That is the name of this episode.
That really took my brain longer to process than it should have. I'm embarrassed by that.
I love it. All right, snackers, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
And I'll eat more snacks before then.